at Fabricius cannot be bribed. Horatius Cocles blocked the narrow bridge alone and ordered his retreat to be cut off, that the enemy's path might be destroyed. Then he long withstood his assailants until the crash of the beams, as they collapsed with a huge fall, rang in his ears. When he looked back and saw that his country, through his own danger, was free from danger, "Whoever," he cried, "wishes to pursue me this way, let him come." He plunged headlong, taking as great care to come out armed from the midst of the dashing river channel as he did to come out unhurt. He returned, preserving the glory of his conquering weapons as safely as if he had come back over the bridge. These deeds and others of the same sort have revealed to us a picture of virtue. I will add something which may perhaps astonish you. For there are, as you know, vices which are next door to virtues, and even that which is lost and debased can resemble that which is upright. So the spendthrift falsely imitates the liberal man, although it matters a great deal whether a man knows how to give or does not know how to save his money. I assure you, my dear Lucilius, there are many who do not give, but simply throw away, and I do not call a man liberal who is out of temper with his money. Carelessness looks like ease, and rashness like bravery. This resemblance has forced us to watch carefully and to distinguish between things which are by outward appearance closely connected, but which actually are very much at odds with one another. And in watching those who have become distinguished as a result of some noble effort, we have been forced to observe what persons have done some deed with noble spirit and lofty impulse, but have done it only once. We have marked one man who is brave in war and cowardly in civil affairs, enduring poverty courageously and disgrace shamefacedly. We have praised the deed, but we have despised the man. Again, we have marked another man who is kind to his friends and restrained towards his enemies, who carries on his political and his personal business with scrupulous devotion, not lacking in long suffering where there is anything that must be endured, and not lacking in prudence when action is to be taken. We have marked him giving with lavish hand when it was his duty to make a payment, and when he had to toil, striving resolutely and lightening his bodily weariness by his resolution. Besides, he has always been the same, consistent in all his actions, not only sound in his judgment, but trained by habit to such an extent that he not only can act rightly, but cannot help acting rightly. We have formed the conception that in such a man, perfect virtue exists. We have separated this perfect virtue into its several parts. The desires had to be reined in, fear to be suppressed, proper actions to be arranged, debts to be paid. We therefore included self-restraint, bravery, prudence, and justice, assigning to each quality its special function. How, then, have we formed the conception of virtue? Virtue has been manifested to us by this man's order, propriety, steadfastness, absolute harmony of action, and a greatness of soul that rises superior to everything. Thence has been derived our conception of the happy life, which flows along with steady course, completely under its own control. How, then, did we discover this fact? I will tell you. That perfect man, who has attained virtue, never cursed his luck, and never received the results of chance with dejection. He believed that he was citizen and soldier of the universe, accepting his tasks as if they were his orders. Whatever happened, he did not spurn it as if it were evil and borne in upon him by hazard. He accepted it as if it were assigned to be his duty. Whatever this may be, he says, it is my lot. It is rough and it is hard, but I must work diligently at the task. Necessarily, therefore, the man has shown himself great, who has never grieved in evil days and never bewailed his destiny. He has given a clear conception of himself to many men. He has shone forth like a light in the darkness, and has turned towards himself the thoughts of all men, because he was gentle and calm and equally compliant with the orders of man and of God. He possessed perfection of soul, developed to its highest capabilities, inferior only to the mind of God, from whom a part flows down even into this heart of a mortal. But this heart is never more divine